Well, a couple things. As I set out weeks ago, kind of slowly preparing for this morning, we're rounding out our series in Hebrews this week and next week, and we have been seeing who Jesus is, that he's superior to all things, what he's done, and we've come to this part of what's our response in it. Even in the midst of trials and suffering or just tough stuff in life. And so what follows this morning is a letter that I've written to my children based on Hebrews chapter 12. It's going to be our sermon this morning. And I'm going to ask you to listen closely. If you notice some fill in the blanks that you have, there's a lot. You have a lot to do this morning. And that's okay. It means you're going to listen well is what that means. But you're going to have to listen closely if you're going to find them all. But Jack's back there, and he's going to do his best to put them on the screen for you as well. So I'd like to read this letter that I wrote to my kids. Hey, kiddos, this is your dad. Hey, I want to first acknowledge the fact that things have been pretty hard in our family for the past few months. I don't know if it was the transition into this new school year or just kind of a funky season of life that we're in, but each of you have faced difficulties and trials that have gotten you down. Mom and I too, I can sense it, I can feel it in the family. And it's felt like it's just kept spinning more and more quickly. Even this past week, with the news we saw about the school shooting at Saugus High, that's your hometown. That's tough and scary stuff. We knew people there. And so when you ask the question, where's God in the hard stuff? Well, I wanted to try to answer that for you. So for the next 20, 25 minutes or so, I just want to invite you to settle in as I read this letter that I've written to you. Grab some popcorn or something. I know. Dad's going to preach another sermon to us. Yes, I am, more than you know. I'm even going to invite some other people to listen in. Why? Because I want to try to give you some perspective that I think might be helpful for you when you face hard times, when we are facing hard times. When you try to accomplish something and it doesn't go your way, when you get really, really frustrated that people are being mean to you and you just feel like giving up on doing the right thing or pushing through to do the hard thing that you know you need to do or just plain making sense of the tough world around you. I'm going to try and show you a pathway to endurance. That's a noun, by the way. It means the power of enduring an unpleasant or difficult process or situation without giving way. And we all need that, right? So you guys ready? Good. Save me some popcorn. In the Bible, there's this book called Hebrews. And the funny thing is, we don't know who the author is. Could be Paul, Barnabas, maybe even Priscilla. That's kind of weird that the author didn't identify themselves. But no, it's not a book about coffee. Hebrews is written to a weary people. They're actually in danger of losing heart. They were the early Christians trying to define what it meant to be a follower of Jesus, and they faced persecution of monumental proportions. But it's not just that they were being persecuted. It's that that persecution threatened to define reality for them. What do I mean? For them, that meant that the message that Jesus and his ways were better than the old law given to Moses, that was too hard, and they were considering moving back towards that Mosaic law. They were considering throwing in the towel. The dream of the Messiah's return to the establishment of his church just seemed too hard. Where was their Messiah in the bad things happening to them? Kind of sounds like your question, right? Where's God on the hard stuff? Now, for you guys and for me and Mom too, we sometimes feel like giving up, following the way of Jesus, living at the center of our lives, because it can be hard too. Like when it feels too hard to be kind to that kid at school who constantly is bumping into you on purpose, right? We've talked about that. I still want his name, by the way. So in order to help give these Jewish Christians some hope and ultimately find some endurance, this author tells them that their faith journey, this journey that we are all on to become more like Jesus Christ, it's pretty much like being in a long-distance race, kind of like the Olympics. It's kind of a cool way to think about it, don't you think? And you know Dad loves running, so I love this metaphor. So the writer to the Hebrews showed these Christians they were invited into this race, that they should persevere, stand firm. And you and I should too. So let me try to paint a picture for you. I actually have some pictures, literal pictures, that I want you to see of what it may feel like to be on the verge of losing heart. It was 1992. Your dad just graduated from high school. Stop trying to do the math. The Olympic Games were being held in Barcelona, Spain. And the event was the semifinals of the 400-meter race. Steve Lewis was the American who was heavily favored. But Derek Redmond was a record holder from Great Britain, and he was fast. So the runners line up, the gun goes off, and bam, they all take off running like crazy. This is what they've been training for. Their eyes are on that finish line. They know what they have to do. This is their last chance to make it to the finals and possibly win a medal. Well, about 250 meters into the race, Derek Redmond's hamstring literally popped and tore almost in half. He pulls up and drops to the ground in sheer agony. His hopes and his dreams, that thing which he's been trying to achieve, is about to pass him by. It's gut-wrenching. You can see the pain on his face. Something has come in between him and the thing that he wants so badly. Can you feel the disappointment, the despair, the hopelessness, the pain? This is what those early Christians were feeling as well. And I know you felt some of this too. Like when you get bullied at school, or you're working really hard on getting that grade up in class and it's just not what you want, or even your classmates that tease you for going to church, or your dad being a pastor, sorry about that, or even the news of a school shooting. Like, all these things can lead to despair and fear and loss of heart. Where's God in the hard stuff? So what do you do? How do you continue? How do we not lose heart? How does Derek Redmond go on after that? Well, I want to get really practical with you right now, because our author knows something that he or she wants to pass on to you and me. So I want to look at some passages in Hebrews 12. And I think if you can stay awake, it'll be really helpful for you. Seriously, just give me like 15 more minutes and we'll get through this. But the bottom line about this chapter in Hebrews is this. Your faith journey is a long distance race. And Hebrews 12 reminds you, this is hard. And because of Christ, you can do it. Let me say that again. Your faith journey is going to be hard, but because of Christ, you can do it. So let me start off by asking you a really basic question here, all right? Do you like winning or losing? Of course you like to win, right? You guys make a competition out of everything. Who gets to let the dog out in the morning? Who gets to get into the car first? It drives us crazy. So I know you love competing, right? Everyone loves to win. Everyone loves to cross the finish line. Well, that is what this is about. But here's the secret. You win when the finish line is crossed. Not if you do it in first place or in last place or in the middle. There are no places. That's the secret. And get this, you finish, then the finish line just needs to be crossed. I'm going to explain that in just a second. So let's ask the question, what do you do when you've grown weary and you can't endure? What do you do? Let me read this out of Hebrews 12, 1 through 3. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter or finisher of our faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary or lose heart. Now, there's three main things in here that I want you to hear about enduring, right? About finishing the race. One, you got to deal with what's weighing you down. You're going to have to run with perseverance, and we're going to have to lift our eyes to Jesus as our example. Let me explain what those are. We have to deal with what's weighing us down. The author says to throw off everything that hinders us. And there are all sorts of things that can happen to us to make it challenging to run our spiritual race and make life hard. Bullies, school shootings, someone lost a job, things like that, the things that happen to us. But we need to deal honestly with the areas that we are contributing to, the things that we are responsible for, right? A runner, Redmond, wouldn't like put on a backpack full of weights and then go to the semifinals and try to run as fast as he could. That would be silly, right? Same with us. Are you guys hanging on to any weights that are making it hard to run your race? Like choosing to be mean to your siblings when you know it's not good to do so, or lying to mom and dad out of a fear of something, or holding on to anger towards other people. Even the choice not to forgive somebody else are the things that weigh you down that you are responsible for. The point is, you have control of those things, and you can choose not to do them. And secondly, we need to run with patience or perseverance. To run with patience is to trust God, and it's to trust that he's working and he's active, even when it feels like he's not. Like, I know we pray a lot at bedtime, and how easy it is to get frustrated after praying over the same request over and over and not seeing that request get answered, or you feel like it's not heard. Like, think about how a parent might feel, how defeating it could feel for a parent to have the same conversations over and over with their kids about a behavior or an attitude that needs to change, and it doesn't seem to change. That's frustrating. Or how frustrating it can feel to work on trying to be more kind or less angry or judgmental and not feel like anything is changing inside you quickly enough. These things take time to change. And lastly, we have hope because we can fix our eyes on Jesus. He did it. We can look up to him and his examples. Hebrews says, consider him. Consider Jesus. Think about how he ran his race. We need to lift our eyes to Jesus. Jesus has run the race before. He knows where the hurdles are. He knows where the course is going to veer to the left or to the right, where it dips down, and he knows where that big, slow, long climb is and how long that's going to last. Our task, your task, is to listen to him and to follow in his footsteps. He's made it across the finish line, and his encouragement is, yeah, this race can be really hard, and you can do it. He's not just the author, but the finisher of our faith. It's like when we've started swimming or water polo, never having done it before. Like, it was hard. But how many people said, your cousins even said, I've been there, I've done what you're doing, and what you've started, you can do it. Trust me, I know. Why? Because they went through it. The point is, if Jesus can do it, we have encouragement that we can do it too. Remember, this race, your spiritual journey, is hard, and you can do it. Here's another thing that can really help us have endurance. We need to remember who God our Father really is and what he's really about. You remember when we lived in Valencia, and every once in a while I'd say, all right, everyone, let's get in the car. We're going to go off and do something fun. And you'd be like, well, where are we going to go? I said, well, you're going to have to trust me. We're going to do something fun. Did we ever end up at the dentist getting shots? No, we didn't. No, we ended up doing something fun like Froyo or Jump 5150 or something like that. Why? You trusted me because you knew who I really was and that I had your best interest in mind. Now, going to the dentist, needing to get shots or doing something like that is important, but didn't try to pull a trick on you or anything like that. And the same is true when we really know who God is. So we need to reorient our reality to the true nature of God. Specifically, these Jewish Christians were experiencing persecution. They were suffering. They were in fear of losing heart. And part of the reason that they had become weary is that they were wrongly interpreting what was happening to them. They thought God was punishing him or them, but he wasn't. God was actually training them. Verses 5 through 11 says this, "And have you completely forgotten this word of encouragement that addresses you as a father addresses his son? It says, 'My son, don't make light of the Lord's discipline, and don't lose heart when he rebukes you, because the Lord disciplines the ones he loves.' Endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as his children. For what children are not disciplined by their fathers?" I told you that your mom and I disciplining you was in the Bible. It's right there. But the true reality of that discipline is that mom and dad love you guys. And I know it doesn't feel that way, but you have to remember what is true and real. Same with God, our Heavenly Father. God loves you and is always looking out for your best interest. Always. You can bank on the fact that God is our loving Father, our dad. Now, I know I've said this to you before. When you guys don't tell the truth or choose to be mean to a friend and you get busted for that, what do I typically say? And it's not, "This will hurt me more than it hurts you." I'm pretty sure it hurts you more than it hurts me, right? I say, "I love you too much to let you keep doing the things that you're doing. And I wouldn't be a very good father if I just let you grow up making the same mistakes, would I?" This is what our God in the universe says to us. He's not some impersonal, rigid, legalistic being who wants nothing to do with you and I except just do his bidding and follow a bunch of rigid, stupid rules. He's not some cosmic killjoy set out to wreck all of our joy and fun in life so we live ho-hum lives that we would not want to wish on our enemies. Our Father is a deeply personal, loving, all-powerful dad who not just cares for you, but he orients everything he does around you. God is always, always working for your good. Just like mom and dad are always working for your good and the good of our family, always. Which is why, if you're wrecking your life, we're gonna step in. And when we're wrecking our lives, God often disciplines us. But don't forget, there's a difference between discipline and punishment. Discipline is training, being trained for something. Punishment is just getting revenge or inflicting suffering on somebody else. There's a big difference. It's because God is always working for our good that he can take any situation that brings us harm. The stuff we do to ourselves or the things that happen outside of us that happen to us, and he can always work them out for our good. So as we remember the true character of God, our perspective can change, and somehow, I believe, endurance blooms. Kids, if we want to cross that finish line, we need to be trained, and training involves discipline. And that's hard, but I know you guys, you can do hard. Oh, kids, mom and I love you so much. I hope you know that. We would do anything to see you succeed and live up to the potential we know God created in you. That's why discipline is so important. Now, there are two more parts to our pathway of endurance. We're almost there, all right? The fact is, we're not supposed to do it alone. We need community, because community breeds endurance. I mean, you actually have to take the steps, but you're not made to run it in isolation. We need like-minded people around us, because community breeds endurance. Listen to these next couple verses about the power of community here. "Therefore, strengthen your feeble arms and weak knees. Make level paths for your feet so that the lame may not be disabled, but rather healed. Make every effort to live in peace with everyone and to be holy, because without holiness, no one will see the Lord. See to it that no one falls short of the grace of God and that no bitter root grows up to cause trouble and defile many." That part that says make level paths for your feet is referring to what other people do to actually help you run your race. It's your youth pastors and children's worker who help train and teach you. This is your teachers and coaches who encourage and equip you. They're important. This is your mom and your dad who pray for you and guide you. And there's two things that community helps us with. Community unites us on the long-term goals, and community encourages us. Think about your swim or your polo coaches, right? Why do they spend time teaching you about proper form when you're in the pool? How come you don't just work on shooting all the time? Well, they know that they have a long-term season in mind. They have long-term goal for you in mind. They know if you have the proper techniques, you're going to be a better player in the long run, right? Not just learning how to shoot, but have the stamina that you need for the whole game, the whole season. It's about being united for the long-term race. It's a call to be united on what is important for the long term. Let me say that again. We need to be united on what is important for the long term. Think about it like this. You know how you guys like dominate the TV downstairs 90% of the time, right? But when Saturday or Sunday rolls around, Dad is always like, hey, let's watch some football, which we're going to be doing in about an hour, by the way. Okay, so in those games, there are a lot of penalties, right? Flags get thrown, a team can take a hit, right? A loss of yards. What if a roughing the passer penalty doesn't get called? Remember what that is, right? And the quarterback who's hit and knocked down, no flag is thrown. He gets so mad, what if he just quit the game, like in the second quarter? Well, that would be lame, right? I mean, you might even call him a big old baby or something like that. Why? Because you don't quit and walk away from the game because something doesn't go your way or you get knocked down. His team needs him. For the long-term goal of finishing the game, he needs to stay in it. Guess what, kids? Our community needs us too. We need to be reminded that while we're feeling fatigued or tired, or while that tragic thing happened to us, or it happened at your school, Danica, do you remember at school at Keys when the Keys had to go on lockdown? You didn't want to go to school the next day, right? Your teachers and mom and dad reminded you that it was going to be okay. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to be scared. But that doesn't mean that we have to quit. We don't have to let fear decide our decisions. It's good to be reminded of this, right? Just like the author of Hebrews was reminding his readers. He was being encouraging, right? So let's be encouraging to one another. That's the other part of community. We need to be encouraging to one another. To be encouraging is to care for each other. To be encouraging is to think of others before yourself. It's to sit in someone else's sadness with them and not try to fix them or the situation. To encourage is literally to infuse courage into another person, helping and enabling them to do the next hard thing, to take the next hard step, to follow God when it's hard to do. Now, this last thing about community, and I wouldn't be a very good dad if I also didn't give you a warning or something that you needed to watch out for. We have to watch out for bitterness. Our author actually calls it a root of bitterness. And bitterness is typically, it's what? It shows up when what? When we don't get our way, right? Actually, it comes when we assign a specific negative meaning to the way that we are treated by someone or to an event that happens to us. When we don't give a charitable judgment, when we feel entitled to something and we don't get it. It's the classic getting mad because someone is sitting in the magic seat at the kitchen table by the window. You know that seat? Why is that seat so special? I still don't know why you guys fight over that. So if you find yourself starting to feel bitter or mad or angry towards someone, you have to talk it through with them. You can't let it take root because bitterness can destroy our family community and it can destroy our community at church as well. We need community because it reminds us that this race can be hard. And you guys can do it. Now, when we do this, we get to hold on to hope. And this is the last part that I want you to hear. We can have hope because we know who ultimately wins in the end. Let me read Hebrews again. It says this, "Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken, let us be thankful and so worship God acceptably with reverence and awe, for our God is a consuming fire." That's what an unshakable kingdom is. We can have hope in an unshakable kingdom. In a shakable world, we are part of an unshakable kingdom. Why? Because we know who ultimately wins. And you know why we know that? Because Jesus was the author and the finisher of the race. He crossed the line for us, and he opens up that unshakable kingdom to you and me. So we have all that access. We have hope because of a new covenant through Jesus. Now, a covenant simply means an agreement. It's a promise. It's a contract between two people. Our new covenant is a promise that Jesus is not just that author, but the finisher of the race we're running. In those earlier verses, it said that Jesus was the, if it had said Jesus was the pioneer of our race and the our example, like he went first and now we just have to follow him, like he ran the race of commandments first and he came to earth and lived an obedient life as our example, now just follow him, that wouldn't feel very exciting to me at all. I'd say, I can't keep up with Jesus. I can't run like Jesus ran. I mean, he didn't knock over any of the hurdles. I can't do that. But it doesn't say that. It doesn't say that Jesus is the pioneer and the example. It says that Jesus is the pioneer and the finisher of our faith. Jesus was obedient. Jesus came to earth. He humbled himself, became obedient even unto death on a cross. Not just as our example, as our substitute. He didn't just run the race as our example. He ran the race for us. And because he crossed the finish line for us, we have confidence and hope because the race is ultimately finished. Like, we know we get the prize. The gospel is not that we give God this great performance and then God blesses us, but that in Jesus Christ, God gives us a perfect record, the prize, which we receive by faith, and then we get to bless God. That is really good news. Unless we accept that the race is already finished for us, unless we accept the finisher of the race, our race would be a grind. It wouldn't be worth fighting for. We'd give up in the second quarter, like the quarterback, right? But we can get up when we're knocked down because of Jesus. He gives us access to God, his Father, and all the kingdom resources. We can have hope because we have access to all the kingdom resources. In the kingdom, we have access to all the love and all the joy and all the peace and the patience and the kindness and goodness and faithfulness and gentleness and self-control, everything we need for anything that comes before us. The kingdom isn't holding on like to save 40% and saying, hey, here's 60% of the resources. Have fun with that. Good luck. As we live in obedient surrender, stripping off all the sin that wears us down, calling on the promises of Jesus in him, even when it's really, really hard, you can do it. You can do hard with Christ. We have hope because we have access to a Father who lifts and sustains us. And Jesus made that possible. Now, let me take you back just to kind of try to give you a real good picture of what this looks like. I want to close with this, and I want to take you back to Derek Redmond. Derek Redmond wanted to finish that race. He thought it was worth it to try to get up and finish. And guess what? Someone was with him to help. I want you to watch it.
Tom Hammond and Craig Massback back at Olympic Stadium in Barcelona, coming up to the men's 400-meter semifinals. Here are the lane assignments. Steve Lewis in lane three. Top four to Wednesday's final. Dee Lewis in lane three. Roberto Hernandez out quickly in four. Now down the backstretch.
Ismael on the left of the screen is running very, very quickly. And inside of Lewis, Sunday Bada of Nigeria.
And Derek Redmond of Great Britain has pulled up with an injury. Redmond is out.
Derek Redmond, the British record holder, and an important member of that British 4x400-meter relay team, as he doesn't want anybody to help him.
It'll be Lewis to win in 44.50.
And look at this. He's going to try to finish his semifinal race. The British have a certain tradition of running, which you have to respect.
A bizarre finish to this first semifinal in the men's 400 meters. Derek Redmond of Great Britain pulled up with an injury halfway down the back stretch. He's fighting off those trying to help him to finish the race in his lane. And now the pain too much. Throughout Olympic Stadium as Redmond, with assistance this time, approaches the finish line he had wanted so desperately to reach. That is the Olympic spirit.
Kids, did you hear and see the great cloud of witnesses surrounding him? All those people cheering him on. That's our community. Did you see his father make his way and lift him up when he was in fear of not finishing and couldn't make it on his own? That's a picture of your heavenly father. Guys, I know that the spiritual race that each of you are running can be really, 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 really hard. But I want you to know and I want you to remember that no matter how you run your race, no matter if you trip, fall, get injured, whether you're at the front, whether you're at the back, none of that matters more than I know that you can do it. I believe in you, and your Father in heaven believes in you even more. I love you. Love, Dad. I'd like to call up our ushers. We're going to pray for our morning offering, and I would like to ask you to sit in this space and this time during our offering to reflect just a little bit about the love that the Father has for you. And perhaps, as you think about the spiritual race that you are on, the journey that you are participating in, what are maybe some of the things that you need to, I don't know, get rid of, that you have control of, that are slowing you down or weighing you down? What are some of the things that are happening from you or to you from the outside that perhaps you need to just write down or make a mental list and ask God to meet you in those places, and to meet you and be with you as you experience that? And after offering is collected, we're going to have an opportunity to remember Christ's death and his sacrifice as we take communion with one another. That seems pretty fitting on a morning like today. So let me pray. We'll move on with our offering, and Ken will come up. Father, you are a good, good Father, who is always looking out for our best interest. And so may we trust in that reality and trust in that. May we be willing to surrender even our hopes, dreams, wants, and desires to you. Here's my life, Lord. Here's my heart, Lord. Here's everything about us. We want to give that to you. So for this time and this space, I'm grateful. And everyone said,